Welcome to episode 7, The New You, Life After the Loss of Suicide. I'm Dawn.
And I'm Trisha.
And today we have a special guest that's going to be joining us, and I'll let Trisha introduce her in just a second. But today we're going to be talking a little bit more about suicidal thoughts among young adults and children, and just kind of touching on some of the stigma maybe and some of the research that we have found associated to that.
You've heard about her in our previous podcasts. Today we're bringing on my youngest daughter, Paige, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about her own struggles with her mental health and emotional states, the ups and downs she's gone through, as well as what it was like to lose her very best friend and her sister both to suicide. So we're going to be asking her a lot of intimate, deep questions today that probably aren't going to be super easy for her to answer. She's been a little prepped, so she's ready to go, but we're super happy to have her today.
And thank you, Paige, for joining us, because I think it's important for us as parents to hear your voice, and I think it's also important just to share with other people, you know, what your thoughts and your feelings were and are now, and I think it's just important. Thank you again. One of the things that we know is that a suicidal feeling can affect anyone. It doesn't matter your age, it doesn't matter your gender, your background, and it can happen at any time. And there's quite a few different causes that could be associated with that. Mental health is probably one of the biggest ones. Along with your mental health, depression seemed to come up quite a bit with that. Could include bullying, discrimination, abuse of any form. It could be bereavements. Maybe ending a relationship, could be chronic physical pain or illness, just adjusting to a new situation, money problems, housing problems, loneliness, being in prison, addiction, substance abuse. It could be pregnancy, childbirth, postnatal depression, doubts about your sexual or gender identity, cultural pressures, and any form of trauma. These are just some of the things that could attribute to this, not to say that it does in every single case, but I also found it was very interesting that a lot more are coming up with the sexual and gender identity communities, which is a little bit scary for me as well. So could medication cause some of this? Yes, it can. And it's important that if you're having any of these feelings again, please contact someone, get help. Don't do this alone, because there is a community out there wanting to help you.
Right. And we may have to spend a whole segment on medications and the enormous list of medications that have suicidal thoughts and tendencies as a side effect, because that could have very well played a big part in both of the girls' passings. But I think one of the things we talked about early on, and Paige and I have even talked about, is the face of suicide. People have preconceived notions of who commits suicide and the type of person. And that was one of the things we wanted to change right out of the gate. When people think about suicide, there is no face of suicide. There's no one person. There's no one financial group. There's no one socioeconomical level that commits suicide. It is everywhere. It's across every gender, every race, every economical level. It's everywhere. So there's a million different causes. We just have to make it okay for these people to ask for help and identify when they need help.
I find that interesting too, because one of the things I just read this morning was, you know, our brain wasn't designed for all the things that we're doing to ourselves right now. You know, we're working a full-time job, we're juggling, you know, whether it's academics for our children or ourselves, we're going to, you know, 15 different social events, we're on social media, and we're doing all these things that our brains and our body wasn't meant to do. And we have to allow ourselves a break at some point and just know that it's okay.
Yeah, we're severely overscheduled, and we start that at a very young age. You see kids that are overscheduled at 7 and 8, we're going to dance, and we're soccer, and we're softball, and we're swimming, and we don't have time to just sit back and relax and be people and figure out who we are. We don't even know who we are some days because we're too busy running around. So there's a lot of contributing factors.
All right, so Paige, I think we'll go ahead and get started with you. And again, if at any point you feel uncomfortable, please just say so and go from there. So one of the first questions that we have was, what was one of your first recollections that you have of suicide, or your first experience that you had with suicide?
My first experience with suicide outside of my head or my thoughts was in 2018 when my cousin Zach had taken his life.
So, you know, when Zach did that, would you look back on that? Because, you know, a million times I've said, oh, I understand suicide. Did you feel like you fully understood the scope of it at that time?
Honestly, at that time, all I really understood was that he was gone and there was no bringing him back. Like, I never understood suicide quite yet.
But you got to stand back and watch his family, and his little brother Matt was your best friend. You got to watch the horror Matt was going through in his family, and your Uncle Leroy and everybody.
Yeah, I did. I got to watch firsthand. I got to watch Matt fall apart and his entire world come crashing down. But sometimes his grief was just too much for him to handle. Like, even those two little human beings depending on him or going to depend on him wasn't enough.
And that's something that you and I have talked about a lot, about your sister. That's the one thing we don't want Walker to grow up and hear, like, why wasn't he enough? She left him. Because it really, there's people with, you know, kids that go all the time, and it has nothing to do with the kids, because in that moment, it's themselves. In that 1 minute, it's themselves, and they don't think further than that. And so we have to work very hard for those children to make sure that they're not carrying that burden when they grow up.
So Paige, with that, have you, after seeing all of that, and I know that you also lost Matt then as well, have you ever thought about suicide or had any suicidal ideations?
I'd love to say no, but like to make my friends, my family feel better. But the truth is, I've thought about it a million times. I've made plans to do it. I've written notes. The first time I had an ideation would have to be when I was about 10 years old. My parents had split up. And for the longest time, I blamed myself because, I don't know, as a kid, we always think, oh, our parents failed because we weren't good enough for them. Like, we didn't do enough to make them happy together. Like, we put it on ourselves. And so I used to get so down in the slumps that this is going to be news to my mom because I don't talk about it with anyone. I would fantasize about cutting myself and making it all disappear. And there were a few times where I actually had done it, but I played it off like I got hurt outside because that's where I was 90% of the time. Anyways, so I did continue a lot of this behavior in high school where I learned if you do it on parts of your body, no one sees, then no one knows. But I would never make it deep enough to leave a scar, just enough to mask the emotional pain I was feeling. Like, on top of that, my mom always used to, like, count my meds or, like, make sure I'm on top of them. There were days where I would go to school and I had taken more meds than I was prescribed. And at the time, I had a friend named Cody, absolute best friend. After Matt passed away, he was there for me for everything. If I couldn't go to my sister, I would go to him. There are days I would go to school and I'd walk up to his car and I was sicker than a dog, and I told him what happened, and he didn't go to anybody in those situations because he always knew that I would figure a way how to get out of it. And what I would do is I would go to the bathroom and make myself puke and tell the nurse I was sick and get sent home and sleep the rest of the day. But, like, I regret the things that I did to mask the pain, but I'm happy that I'm still here today because it shows that even though I've hit some nearly impassable walls, I pushed myself to climb them and move on to the next battle that was ready for me.
Awesome. Just kind of piggybacking off of that, so with your friend, if you have a friend who does that, would you recommend them not saying anything?
No, because most of the time when I would tell him some of the things in my head or some of the things I wanted to do or some of the things that I have done, he would go to his mom. And there was a time, and I think I was working at a restaurant, and I was so down in the hole that I texted him and I told him I didn't want to be here anymore. And he told his mom, and they called my mom. So, like, I think when they think it's an actual, like, threat where it can't be fixed, or, like, it can to a certain extent, then they not really go out of their way, but they go and get help. But I still think that even if it's just the littlest things, they should come forward and try and do something about it.
In high school, having a friend tell me the same thing, and, you know, they made the comment, if you tell anybody, that's it, we're done. And I made the choice to tell someone because I felt like it's okay to lose our friendship if that's how you're going to feel, but at least I know you're alive. And I think that's hard for kids at that age. And so kudos to your friend for getting you that help and helping you out of that hole. So
as she sits here and she talks about, these are things I don't think my mom knows. If Paige will remember back, she had a scratch on her arm, she says, one day. And I did the whole crazy mom, you know, I grabbed her arm and I took a picture of it. And me and her sister, we cornered her and we counted pills. And there's things that our children would like to think we don't know. While there are things that we definitely don't know, I think there are things that we pick up on that we watch because we're just not sure. And you never want to be the one to jump. Probably forevermore, I will now be the one to jump first and ask questions later because I don't ever want to miss that again. I would rather be called crazy than miss a sign ever again, you know. But and it, we talked about being on the radar, and Paige, I think came up in our first show for some reason. And Paige had a traumatic brain injury when she was six. She had a severe sledding accident with an open skull fracture and collapsed lungs. And back, you know, in 2005, they didn't do a lot of testing on the, oh, she's up, she's running, she's fine, she's brilliant. They sent her home. So we don't know how much of Paige's, because she was never a down child before the accident. So we don't know how much of Paige's roller coaster comes from the brain injury or comes from, you know, environment. Because her father and I did have a volatile relationship, and she struggled more than the other two with the divorce. Definitely. She was by far the daddy's girl. And she wanted to make everything okay for her dad. And so she felt that was her job. And at 5 years old, that's not your job, you know. And so we knew Paige was always on the radar for me. And it's hard to say that to your kid like you're on the radar. But she definitely knew because mom was stalking her and checking on her 100 times a night, you know. So there's certain things I didn't know. But there's always something in the back of my head that I knew you have to keep an eye on Paige. And when Cody comes in, I love that kid bigger than life. And his mom, he's very honest with his mom. He talks to his mom about everything. And I always would tell my kids, like, if something's mission critical, I'm going to have to tell somebody. And that's where Cody is really good at that. If he felt like it was mission critical, his mom would call me. So, but hindsight, looking back at Matt and Morgan and Zach, I would think, and Paige has been in this situation since with a couple of friends at college. No questions asked. Any inference of suicide, any inclination that something's coming, you have to say something. And Paige has been put in a situation where she's had to say something a couple times. And how did that go, Paige?
Well, it didn't go very well. The whole story behind that was my roommate at the time had texted me saying she wanted to do some things to herself. And at the time, she was saying that she was okay and she would never do anything that herself, and she just made promises that she really wasn't, like, honest for. And we talked to the same counselor at that college, and she lied to the counselor too. And when she sent that to me, I took a screenshot and I sent it to the coach, and the coach sent it to the counselor. And in the end, I lost a friend, but I also got to realize that I just helped someone get help even though they didn't want it, because she doesn't have the best track record with mental health, and she does get help. I just think she's not getting enough to actually make a difference in how she feels.
Help is easy, but it's the right thing.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of go back to, there's a reason God put you in her life, and maybe that alone was the reason. Yeah, I don't know, but you lost a friend possibly, but you also saved her life. So I think that's that's something to be proud of. Paige, I'm going to go back to, so I know the divorce was something for you, one of the circumstances. Was there any other things that you felt were contributing factors to those thoughts?
I'm not entirely sure. I mean, that was almost 10 years ago, but I think the biggest thing for me was I still never fit in at school. Like, I fit in kindergarten before the accident. After that, I was just the outsider. I was different. And I did a lot of things the boys did. I wrestled. I played in the mud. I drove a four-wheeler. Wanted to play football. I wanted to do everything my brother did, and that made me different because I didn't follow society standards for the typical girl. So I really wasn't liked that much. So I think that played a huge factor in how I felt.
That Paige was definitely your classic tomboy. You could put her in the prettiest clothes and she'd come in covered head to toe in mud and she could care less. She'd get dressed for school in the morning and she would come down the stairs and her sister would say, no, go back up there and put something else on. She'd have flowers and stripes and polka dots and two different socks on. She didn't give a shit. She was just going. She's like, I got clothes on. I don't care. But she was also, Paige is very blessed tonight. She did not get it from me. She has such an athletic ability. She, you know, is a star track runner and softball player, and she was very agile at wrestling when she was younger, and she stuck with it. So she's this little tiny ball of muscle, and she just fit in with the guys better than the girls because the girls looked at her as some sort of anomaly. You know, who wants to do that stuff? You know, that's boy stuff. And Paige would internalize that and then pull away. When somebody tried to get close to Paige, she would pull away from them because instead of putting myself out there and waiting for them to say something to hurt me, I'm just going to stay way back here. So I noticed in school, like when my other kids were in high school and junior high and they wanted to go and run with their friends, I can probably count on my fingers how many times Paige went out in high school. She just didn't. If she wasn't doing sports or homework, she was chilling at home on the weekend. And so she definitely had a different school experience than most kids.
And I do. I think school, and for the younger kids especially, plays a big role in that, whether it's the bullying, whether it's the feeling isolated, you know, the grades, you know, there's just so many components to it. And kids can really be cruel. So that's a tough spot to be in.
When you were going through all that, Paige, did you have one person, aside from Cody, that you felt safe you could always go to?
Are you talking about in high school or
just through the whole thing, through any of your struggles?
For the most part, it would have been my sister Morgan, but through some of it, I had Matt there to kind of pick me up and kind of have that outsider point of view, like, I'm not your, like, sibling, but I'm still going to treat you like a sibling, and I'm going to tell you how I feel because I've been through the same thing. But he's not going to be like, oh, I'm going to tell your mom, or, like, you have to do this. He was more of a, if this is what you want to do, then do it, but it's not the right thing to do.
That was Matt for sure. He was never going to rat you out. He's the ride or die. He's going to go down with you and keep that a secret. You two were, they were both very sweet and very sensitive kids, but didn't fit real well into school, so they kind of stuck together, but they were quiet. And that meant quiet when they were doing something bad, too.
Yeah, I was going to say the quiet ones are the ones you got to watch out for.
Yeah. So when you had suicidal thoughts or the thoughts of self-harm or taking pills, or when you were in that moment, did you ever consider what it would feel like for me or your dad or your brothers, sisters, your family?
So I guess when I had those thoughts, basically I'd be trapped in my mind, like trying to decide what to do with it. And I sat like that for like 20 to 30 minutes. And after that, I'd give myself reasons, like, personal reasons, like about myself, about my life, that would mean that I can't leave. And then I guess for the last 2-ish years, the biggest reason that I've even kept myself above water was because of my nephew, Walker, because I know he needs me. But for the most part, like, at the end of all of it, I've always thought about my loved ones because I don't like inflicting pain on others. And I've, over the years, I've watched them go through pain, like losing someone naturally, like divorces, like accidents, stuff like that. But then most recently, my sister leaving, I've seen it. I've seen like the different levels of grief or pain that they've gone through, and I don't want to cause another scenario like that.
And I think that's important too, because I don't know that everybody feels that way that you did. And I think it's important that you recognize that. I think a lot of times people are so stuck in their grief and their problems that they're thinking about stopping the pain. And I don't think everyone has that same mentality. It's, you know, they just want the pain to stop. Kind of, Trish, how you went back to that story about someone getting hit in the head with a hammer, and day after day after day, it just continues. And then you have that little reprieve, and then you know at some point that hammer's going to come back. Are you waiting for it or are you not? And I think it's important to realize that not everybody has these same reactions.
Like Paige said, you know, we're talking about if she thought about loved ones. And I think watching Paige from outside, from externally, prior to her sister's passing, Paige was very self-centered in her mental illness, because that's how mental illness is. But she felt, this is how I feel. These are my feelings. You don't get to tell me. I can feel however I want. And if I want to do this, this is what I want to do. And yes, she knew it was hurting us, but I don't think that there was an evolution in Paige's brain until, because Morgan wasn't on the radar and it came out of nowhere. Paige had an inkling the day before. She said, Mom, she's hiding something. Something's wrong. And the next day she was gone. It was too late. Something in Paige changed then. Like it was an immediate change. She knew, I have a problem. I need to get help because this is not my answer. It can never be my answer. And so now when she's feeling odd or she's feeling off, she will call me right away. We need to call the doctor. We need a different therapist. We need to do this. I need to see you. We need to spend a day. Something in Paige shifted. You know, she'd watch Zach and she'd watched Matt. But when Morgan passed, something in Paige changed to where she realized that she just couldn't leave. It wasn't an option because Walker needs her and Chance needs her and I need her. And so there is definitely a shift. Prior to Morgan's passing, Paige's battle with mental illness was very self-centered or internal. Like, she didn't want to share that, and she didn't want to let us help her because it was all hers. And now she's very open about it because she understands that it will gut everybody around her. And so it's changed, and it was a horrible way for it to change. But she now has a purpose going forward.
So I want to go back to that where you wouldn't allow people in early on because that was your problem. And Paige and I kind of talked about this a little bit before, which was why? Why didn't you? Was it because of the stigma? Was it because, I guess, what was the reason?
I guess, like, the reason why I didn't was because in my head I was like, no one can tell me how I can and can't feel. And that's, at that point in time, that's how it felt, was I'm getting told how I can or can't feel. Like, even though, like, I couldn't change how I felt, like, I couldn't change the voices or the thoughts in my head that made me feel that way, I didn't think anyone else could change it either. So I was like, this is mine. This is what makes me me. No one can fix it. Might as well not even have them have a say in it. Because what's the point? Because nothing's going to change.
Do you feel like a lot of people feel that way in your situation?
I think a lot of the people who have taken their life have felt that way, because I guess from my standpoint of helping a lot of people, what I've realized with them is that they're the same way. Like, you can't tell me how I feel. And I don't know, I feel like most of those who have committed suicide are like that, because you can't tell someone how they can or can't feel. I mean, you can tell them how they should feel, but you shouldn't be able to tell them how they can and can't feel, because it's kind of like my rights end where your nose starts. Like, I can't punch you in the face. So why should I be able to tell you how you can feel?
You can, it's just not advised.
Yeah.
Can you go back to when you were talking about the voices in your head? What does that look like?
Like in my head, or what I would think in other people's heads?
In your head, what did it look like? Were they like strong voices saying, like telling you to do things, or was it thoughts?
I guess for me, it wasn't strong, stern voice. It was like, kind of like a little kid, like just talking to me. But it wouldn't, like, I wouldn't just hear it. I'd have like picture images, like showing me what I should do, showing me how I should do it. And basically, it's kind of like a five-year-old begging for candy. Like, it's just going to annoy you until you do it. And I thank God I never let it annoy me to the point where I left.
Thanks for sharing that. One of the things that we talked about a little bit too was when you were in school, whether it be elementary or high school, did you have anyone like come in and do talks with you about mental health or suicide prevention?
In all honesty, I don't remember many talks in high school about mental health until suicide started to become a big thing. And then we never had anyone actually come in about it, but our guidance counselor would kind of be like, don't do this. It affects your loved ones. I guess outside of school, we had, at my house, we had a lot of talks with me, my mom, and my sister, or my mom and my stepdad, sometimes my brother, about my mental health. Or sometimes it would, if I would take a weekend to go away, like at my aunt and uncle's house, they would sit there for an hour or two talking about my mental health, and it was kind of like an orientation, learning all over again what's going on in my head.
I think it's fair to say that when you have a child you see struggling like that, and Don, you probably know too, you don't really know what to do. You know, you can talk and talk and talk at them, and that's basically what you're doing, is you're talking at them. You're not talking with them because you don't understand where they're at, and you don't know what's going on in their head. All you know is what you think should be going on. And what's going on is not what you think should be going on, and that's where her and I would butt heads. She has that very strong redheaded personality, like, no, she will butt heads. And I'm like, Paige, this isn't right. And she's like, this is me, take it or leave it, you know. And so we really butted heads, but you're so lost and you're terrified. And then there's a part of you as a parent that you feel like, what did I do? And that's silly. Looking back, it's silly. It's a chemical imbalance. It's nothing you have any control over. You know, there's something going on in there that nobody has control over, but you just got to figure it out.
Definitely. Do you think it would have helped if someone came in to your schools and talked about that, so the stigma wasn't there?
At one point, I think it would have helped, because there were a lot of kids in my school and in my class in general that had a lot of suicidal thoughts but never did anything about it. They just, I guess for me, they give off a vibe that they're not okay and that something's not clicking. They're just ready to leave. I catch that vibe. The day before my sister left, she just was distant. She didn't want anything to do with me. She didn't hug me. She didn't look at me when she said she loved me. Like, she just wanted nothing to do with me. And I looked in her face and I saw the look I had in my face when I wanted to die. And that day, I was like, I know something was wrong, but, you know, like, she was going through a lot. I never knew. Maybe she's just sad about what's going on, or you never know. But in high school, if someone gave off that vibe, I'd try and talk to them. I wasn't a very outgoing person, but I'd try. I don't think our school really gave a about mental health. They cared more about drugs and alcohol and bullying than anything else.
And all of it kind of rolls into one, but when you're talking, like, so you had your first thoughts at 10, what, if you could change that, so if you could recommend when you were in school that somebody come in and start talking to you about it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to express how you feel, and to start having open, candid conversations about mental health and what's going on inside, what age would you think that we should start those kinds of conversations?
I think around, like, the pubescent age, because I guess that's the age when a lot of your emotions change because you have like hormone levels changing and you just don't know what to do with it. But then that's the age where typically you normally get technology. Like, that's typically the age your parents are like, yeah, you can have a phone, you can have a TV in your room, a game system. And around that age, they start getting more into social media, and that's kind of when things start to drop for people, is when they focus so much on that fake life that they can set up, or that animated game that seems so real that they don't really care about anything else.
So you say pubescent, but you were 10, so that would have put you younger. So clearly there's got to be kids younger than that that are suffering, right?
Yes.
I would agree. I think 10 is probably a starting age where I would want to see. I teach in a school and I have 10-year-olds, and I definitely feel like there's a conversation that should be starting at those age levels. I don't think it needs to get into the explicit, but I think we need to at least start the conversation.
Just having them understand that sometimes when you feel things, they're okay to talk about, but they're not okay to feel. You just have to know what to do with it.
Right. And Paige and I talked earlier, too, about just having the coping mechanisms. I don't feel like a lot of our kids have those today. And maybe we didn't either. I don't know. But I just feel like there's such instant gratification expected with our children today. We don't want to see our kids hurt. We don't want to see them struggle. And life is about struggles. And we need to set them up that failure is okay. And we need to communicate. We need to get out from behind the social media, you know. And I'm just as bad. I'm on my phone a lot of times. But these kids need to know how to cope with this. It's okay.
And we didn't have the, like Paige said, the constant stimulation from social media and cell phones. And we didn't have that. We got out of school and we went home to our family. We've talked about that. These kids are constantly connected to each other. So if you're in a good relationship with your friends, that's okay. If you're in a bad one, or you're the butt of all the bad jokes, that's bad. And these kids don't ever get a break from that. And it used to be, you know, when my kids were little, at nighttime you take their phones away. And then the older they get, you quit doing that. And I think that's a bad thing to get out of. They need a break from a lot of the external pressures that they get. But the instant gratification, like everything should be fixed right now. Life doesn't work that way. And I, you know, my kids were very highly competitive, and we did a lot of travel sports when they were little. And Paige's brother for 2 years never lost a wrestling match. And the first one he lost, holy hell, the fit he threw on that mat was horrendous. Do you remember that, Paige?
Yes.
And I went out there like the crazy mom, and I picked him up off the ground, and I made him apologize to the other coach. And that referee looked at me like, this woman is nuts. Because Chance had taken off his leg band and threw it on the ground, and I said, you pick it up. And the ref picked it up, and I said, put it down. And he looked at me like I was crazy, and I put it down. Chance picked it up. I said, I'm going to give it back to him. You apologize. And he's like, Mom, you made me look stupid. I said, no, I did not. You made yourself look stupid by behaving. Part of life is losing. You need to learn to lose gracefully, because if you think I win every day in adult life, you're sadly mistaken, because I can guarantee I lose more days than I win. But a lot of kids don't know how to lose. And so they internalize it, and it just becomes so big. Paige, looking back, do you think you're more aware of your mental health now? Like, do you feel shifts in yourself? Like, you feel like, ooh, something's not right.
I guess this past year compared to the 9 years before, I'm more aware now than I've ever been. Like, I noticed even the slightest change. This week, for example, I normally, I cry a lot, and I sleep a lot when I start to hit a low. And I started sleeping a lot this week, and I'm dating the sweetest kid. I looked at him last night before I went to work, and I was like, I think I'm starting to hit a low because all I've done is sleep. And I can't ever get out of bed. And he looked at me and said, well, that's okay as long as you get up at one point and take care of yourself.
And I think you've figured out with yourself, too, that when you voice that, it does take some pressure off. When you come and you say something, hey, Mom, I don't feel right. Or you tell Braden, I don't feel right. When you open up, because initially, I love her boyfriend. He's the sweetest kid ever, but they're both gingers. Like, we have a little bit of a fire going on here. So she would not tell him when she was down. And so then he'd get mad because she was acting like a butt. And then I got a referee. And Paige, when she realized that she has to start telling people, that takes such a weight off. So we know what's going on. And we can kind of, you know, give you a push in the right direction. But I think part of that is growing up. You know, you're not 10 anymore. You're going to be 20 in 2 weeks, actually. You're going to be 20. And so you know your body. You know how you feel. And you know this horrible loss that you've suffered, so you know that just ignoring it isn't an option. Because Paige used to be the classic, I will take my bipolar medicine until I feel a little bit better, and I don't need it. I don't need that anymore. I feel great. And then 2 weeks later, we're in a puddle on the floor, and we can't even figure out what's going on. So then we have to start all over. That's how her mom started counting pills. She now has grown up, and she knows that you have to take them consistently because it just doesn't go away. We preface this conversation with Paige is actually a psychology student in college. So she's learning all kinds of stuff on all ends of the spectrum here.
And I don't think she's the only one that does that. I think once you get to that point where you start feeling better, many people do that. And it's important for them to understand, even though those medications may not make you feel the best, they are helping you balance. And meds are a whole tricky ball game. You know, to try to find the right ones and the right dosage. And so stick with it. You will get there.
Right. So now when you feel that stuff creeping in, Paige, like, so you told Brayden last night, I think I'm hitting a low. So you feel it creeping in. What sorts of things do you do to, when you encounter that, what do you do?
I guess I still have a day every once in a while where I get that low and I feel lost. Like, I don't know what to do. Sometimes, like, when it starts, I kind of just isolate myself from my coworkers and my families because, like, although that is a very bad thing to do, I'm one for being alone. I feel better when I'm completely alone rather than when I am surrounded by people because I'm not a people person. People give me anxiety and I don't like that. But after I isolate, I listen to a lot of music that has like a deeper meaning behind it. So when I hit that low, I like listen to music like that. And it makes me think about what his meaning behind the song is rather than what's going on in my head. So then it like kind of diverts my attention enough to where I can finally smile and laugh and I'm happy.
Paige also is a busy person's best friend when she's stressed because she has a tad bit of OCD and she likes to hospital sterilize your whole entire home, color code your clothes. I can tell when she's having a bad day because, man, it smells so clean in her house.
If you're going to have one of those episodes, please come to my house then. That would be awesome. And I think, too, when you're talking about the self-care and recognizing, you know, the sleep habits, it's important to make sure you're eating healthy, exercise if you can, get plenty of sleep, you know, unplug from that social media if you can. I think the music is great. It gives you that connection. And just do things that are good for you.
She does pretty good about disappearing. She'll go do her nails or go, she's like, I'm going to go shopping for my own self, by myself. And she'll go shopping for a while, and then she'll text me and she'll say, this sucks. I don't want to spend my own money.
Can I borrow them?
So what opened your eyes, Paige, and changed your outlook? Like, instead of looking forward and thinking everything is so dark, now you look forward to a happy future.
So I guess even though, like, I hit the lowest I've ever been was in 2018 when Matt had passed. What opened my eyes and changed my outlook was when my sister took her life in 2020. Because I, like, even though I saw what Matt's leaving did to the family, it never really hit me until my sister left. That's when it kind of got real for me. Like, I mean, I knew her for my entire life at that point. She left and I felt like I had nobody left. Because growing up, like, mom was always working. Dad was off doing whatever he was doing. Chance was with his friends because he was a social person. And Morgan was there. She was taking care of us because mom was working endless hours to keep food on the table and make sure all the bills were paid. and to get us the things we need. So when she left, it was kind of like, am I really letting these things in my head try and beat me? When my sister let them beat her and it caused all this pain, why would I let something beat me if the aftermath is just transferring your pain to someone else? And I guess not to be morbid, but I don't want to be like her. I want to be there for her son. I want to see him graduate kindergarten. I want to see him graduate high school. Like, I want to see him go to college, and I want to be there for him because she can't.
And I think it's important too to understand though that in that moment she wasn't Morgan. She's still that great person. She's still loving, fun person. And to be able to separate that from her illness is really important, because that's not who she was, and not to let that define her.
Right. They lost the battle on one day. She lost the battle that one day. What I choose to focus on is the hundreds of days prior to that where she won that battle. Because when you have a mental illness like that and you're not getting the proper care that you need and you're not talking about it and you're fighting it alone, it's a battle every single day. And Paige understands that better than anybody. It's a fight every day to keep your head above water. So our girls, they lost the fight one day, but they won it how many days?
Right.
Paige, if there was something you could tell a young person who's feeling like you did when you were 10, what would that be?
Honestly, I would say, don't think it's just going to pass. Like, I understand you'll have a day where you'll feel great and like it was just a phase, but that darkness will only come back because that's just a high. That's just one high out of the several highs you'll have, but there's going to be so many more lows coming, and you just don't know when they're going to hit. Like, you'll have a day where you're perfectly okay, and the next day, it's like you got hit by a truck, and you're not you. You're not there. It's like you're alive, but inside you're dead, and you're there to be there. Ask for help. Like, talk to your friends, family, or guardians if, you're not living with your real family, or, if you're part of a foster community. Like, do something about it. Like, don't let yourself stray too far away from that good that you see your life as unworthy, because you're better than that. You're better than the voices in your head, and you're better than, sometimes it could be your genetics, but you're better than that imbalance. Because, most people that have committed suicide, like Mom said, you've had so many days where you've won that battle. You can do enough, you can do more to win that battle every day. You just have to set goals. Because what I learned with dealing with what I'm going through, you set even the littlest goals, it pushes you to strive for the next day.
So with what you know now, are you able to sense what you need or sense it in other people so you can reach out and be aware that there are things that are too much to handle alone?
Yes, because when I start to get to a spot where I feel as if I need help, I speak out more than normal. I call you, and there was one day where I sat outside and the parking lot at work, and I talked to Chance about how I felt because I needed to talk. And when I talked to him, I was like, I don't want to leave like her. I don't want that one bad day where I don't win that battle. I need help. And I talked to him about it. And that same day, right before that, I had actually talked to my mom, saying I felt like I was drowning, like I couldn't breathe, and I needed help because I was just having the rough time at work. It was really kicking me in the rear because working the shift I do, I feel like I don't sleep, but I sleep. But working at nights, I don't see sunlight. I don't get to see my family as much as I used to. I don't get to talk to my friends as much as I used to. So my whole life turned around and my mental health started to drain the longer I was on that shift. So I guess for me, like when I start to feel like that, like even the slightest bit, I talk, because that's what I've learned to do best since my sister left.
And I think it's important. I mean, you've got a great support group, and there are some people who don't have that, but you need to keep talking to someone who will listen, whether it's getting into a support group of your own, whether it's, you know, finding that friend. You've got to be able to talk to someone. And I know, Trisha, I think you talked on this a little bit the last time. Even calling the suicide helpline doesn't mean that you're going to commit suicide. It just means you need someone to talk to, and they have resources, too, that will help you get in touch with people to do that.
And, you know, and I think, Mon, you and I have talked about this before. You know, like Paige said, when she has those moments, she'll call. And your kids have moments where they call and they just need to talk to Mom. There's some people in our lives that may never understand why when that phone rings, we will always answer it. Like, there will, if I miss a call from my children, I will have complete panic. Like, I have to call them back and I won't stop until they answer. I don't know that that's a trigger that will ever go away. And I've spoke with Leroy about that. He said people struggle with him, and like the phone rings and he'll just get up and walk out of a meeting or a date or whatever's going on. You have to. There's something that happens to us after a loss like that. We'll never be the same. If somebody in the family calls, I'll answer it. You know what I mean? If the kids call, it has to be answered. And I know if Paige calls me, like she'll text me in the middle of the night, and I'm an awful sleeper, up and down light. And Jim's like, why are you texting in the middle of the night? You're trying to sleep. And I said, hey, if she works middle of the night and if she needs to talk to me and she's texting me, I need to text her back. Because for Paige, if she reaches out and there's a long period of time before somebody reaches back to her, she just goes further and further and further down. So I try to keep an ear open for the phone at night for her. And it's just one of those things, it's like a tick. We'll always have it. You know, that phone will ring and we'll always jump. Or if it doesn't ring one day, we're calling them. Why haven't you called me?
It's amazing how many things change in your life after that.
Yeah. And I think that we say, yeah, it's just parents, but that's not how it works either, because I went one evening to go out to dinner with my best friend, look at Paige, and I didn't tell her where I was going, and at 10:30 I get a phone call. Where are you? I said, I'm on my way home. Why? I was not aware you were going anywhere. Why are you not at home? You don't have location on your phone. Like, she chewed my ass because I was somewhere and she didn't know where I was at. So it's an all family trauma now.
And I think it's important too. I mean, just in talking with you and your family, it's great that you guys have those conversations that you do. And who would have thought that these were conversations we needed to have with our kids? But it is important, and obviously hindsight is 20/20. But you know, for families who may have experienced this or may not have, communication is key. You've got to talk to your kids and have them feel comfortable enough to talk to you as well.
So thank you, Paige, for coming on, because that was huge, and I know that was a little stressful for you. It's a lot of deep, yucky stuff we're talking about, but you've chosen, you know, in the aftermath of everything we've been through, to speak out. You've talked to other people, you've been on some chats with people to help talk them down, but you've also done some speaking on your own Facebook page. You explain a little bit why you feel the need to speak out?
Well, I guess I've chosen to speak out about my story because it matters. Like, to be able to show those who are struggling that even when I barely made it, I still made it. Like, I fought those voices. I battled those feelings. I did it for myself, but I also found a reason outside of myself to do it for also, like Walker, for example. And listening to someone else's story of them surviving their worst days can help that one person who's having the toughest day to understand that they can survive too. They just have to try.
And Paige did something that there's no way I could have done. She actually was one of the main speakers at her sister's funeral service. There's no way I could have ever stood up and did what she did. And so it was maybe a few months after Morgan's passing that Paige also recorded that speech, and she broadcast it live out onto the internet. So maybe we'll find that today, and we'll post it up on our page so everybody can see that. But I was very impressed with her composure and the content, because it's something that at that point in the game I was just not able to do. So I'm very proud of her. And I know going forward, Paige has expressed a lot of interest in getting into schools and doing some speaking, you know, to kids. And so that may be something that we're get into here in the future, drag her along with us.
Well, Paige, again, thank you for sharing your story and sharing with others too. I think it's important that they hear not only us, but from the youngsters in this group. So thank you. Until next time, if you have any questions or comments, please drop us a message on our Facebook page. And we hope to see you soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
If you or someone you know is in crisis or struggling with mental health or suicidal thoughts, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. Again, that's 1-800-273-8255. Remember, you're never alone. You can also find resources at suicidepreventionlifeline.org.